Hadi Suunda, Cheryl Bearsley, Natalie Westen, Them Denusley. My name is Cheryl Bear, and I'm from the beautiful village of Natalie. Natalie Westen is located about an hour and a half west of Prince George, way up north on Highway 16, the Highway of Tears. I always like to acknowledge the land that I'm on. A lot of places that I go to, a lot of churches that I go to, they don't do that. They don't do it certainly every morning service and every evening service like you guys. And I'd like to commend you for that. And it's even in the bulletin every week. I'm always like, dang, thank you. We're on the beautiful land of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish, and we want to acknowledge them and thank them for letting us do our business on their land. One of the reasons the land acknowledgement is important to me is because I remember being in grade 6, and I'm born in 1968, so this is like really long time ago, back in the Stone Age. But my teacher, things only have changed in the last, 10 or so-ish years, really, when it comes to school curriculum. I remember being in grade 6, and my teacher got up and said, okay, this term we're going to be studying Indians in Canada. Of course, nobody would say that today, right? But I was there, and I'm like a little, brown hair, had dark hair, and I was like a little darker than everybody else in the class. I had another native kid in the class. So as soon as I heard, oh, that's us, like we're Indians in Canada, we were kind of like, that's so cool. But immediately, within seconds, the teacher went from, this is what we're studying, then went to, oh, but we're going to study the Hurons in Eastern Canada. So I was like, huh? Like who? Where? And then right after that, the teacher said, I'm pretty sure they're extinct. So honestly, I was sitting there and I'm like, I went from like, yay, no, why? As a grade 6 kid, right? And just rendered in those moments invisible. So when we can take the curriculum off and took, just objectified some group over here and some ancient history stuff anyway. When I hear the land acknowledgement, it is seriously like a baby step in the long journey of reconciliation. Like Canada's just learning how to walk. That's the baby step. That's how but it's a significant baby step to me. When I hear the land acknowledgement, I feel like I'm a human being. So it doesn't matter whose land I'm on, I'm always like, yay, they did it, good job. So we have a lot more steps to go, a lot more steps to learn, but I'm grateful for the steps that this church has taken. I always feel at home here. I'm going to open up my time with a prayer song, just a simple song. We open up every gathering that we do, powwow, potlatch, business meeting, every level of government will acquiesce to one of our elders opening in prayer. So this is a chant. It doesn't have any word-for-word translation, but it represents the deepest cry of our heart. Luke, I was given verses 17 to 49 of Luke chapter 6. That's a lot of verses. So, and I normally when I go and speak anywhere, like I just get to show up and talk about native stuff because I'm basically work as a consultant to indigenous of indigenous culture, worldview, value for churches and for CBM, especially Canadian Baptist Ministry. So I show up and I get to talk about whatever I want to. But these guys give me these verses, like 100 verses, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, this means work. So, dang it. But it was good. It was interesting reading through Luke. Luke just took me on a very interesting journey. So we'll dive in. We begin in Luke chapter 6. You guys would have heard, you've been in Luke for a while, so you would have heard this last week or so. Luke chapter 6 starts with Jesus right off the bat challenging religious people, religious leaders. He starts healing people and he appoints his 12 disciples. And when it comes to all of the verses that I was given, that Jerry read very well, you get to the very end, and it talks about building your foundation. Your foundation is important. But this is at the end of the chapter, and it's kind of kooky. Like, who starts building a building and ends with the foundation? Like, that's backwards. And so I was thinking about that, and I thought, maybe that's what Luke was doing all along. Maybe he had started off in the beginning and he was building the foundation the whole time and we just didn't realize it. And the foundation that we find ourselves being shown through Luke 6, it's new. It's a new way of being, a brand new set of values to build our lives on. So Luke, you guys have had an introduction to Luke. I won't go into very many more details. Luke is a friend of Paul the Apostle. He's not Jewish. He's a Gentile from Antioch, which is ancient Syria. He's a physician. Some of my favorite stories are exclusive to Luke. The road to Emmaus. I love that. I love the line, "Did not our hearts burn within us?" That they didn't recognize Jesus until he disappeared. And I think sometimes my life is like that. I'll hear from God something, and then later on I won't do it, and then later on I'll be like, "Oh, that was you, God. Didn't my heart burn within me, and I didn't listen. Please don't stop talking just because I'm a dum-dum." I pray that a lot. So the parable of the Good Samaritan, which is like an oxymoron to the ancient Jewish ear. It's a powerful story. The parable of the prodigal son, one of my favorites. And the Magnificat is in there as well. Which is also going to be the name of my next cat. Yes. So Luke, being a Gentile in a very Jewish setting, you find this book being very, it's got a keen focus on Gentile inclusion. And I like that because I have often felt like the Gentile. I was the little brown girl in a sea of white church growing up. And every church that I've gone to felt like a cross-cultural experience. So, and some not really great. So I love this focus. Luke 3 to 9, those entire sections, they talk about Jesus and his mission in Galilee. And of course, Jesus' mission is found in Luke 4:8, where Jesus is quoting Isaiah 61. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach the good news to the poor and freedom for prisoners, new sight to the blind and freedom for the oppressed." Luke 4:8, again, that bunch of chapters, Jesus talks about, or he shows us what the good news is. He exemplifies it, and especially what good news means to the poor. Now, the poor doesn't always just mean the people with no money, because we see who Jesus is interacting with and reacting to and healing. The poor refers to people who are of low social status, people with disabilities, women, children, and elderly. Women were considered property in these days, and according to this ancient people. Children and elderly were just kind of useless. They were a drain on society. They weren't part of the economy in any significant way. Sometimes, I guess. But anyway, outsiders were also in this group, people of other ethnic groups, and religious outsiders, the sinners, people like a tax collector and a sex worker. And Luke 6, starting in verse 12, Jesus appoints the disciples, and then going on through until 49, he gives his manifesto in the sermon given on the plain, as Luke calls it. And in these verses, we find Jesus giving us radical values. He changes everything. And as you were listening to Jerry, some of those things that as I was reading through this stuff, I'm like, man, this is impossible. These are impossible standards that we're being asked to do. All of these things, they're so hard. It's so hard to live up to these things. So in order to love outsiders and the poor, Jesus' values are to practice radical generosity. He says in here, to lend to people who won't bother to pay you back. Like, that is not okay. That is like, wait a second, Jesus. It's almost like, I have a question. You know, how am I supposed to survive? What is the deal with that? Give to anyone who asks? What? How do I do that? Servant leadership is exemplified here. Peacemaking, forgiveness, strong faith. Some of the books that talk about Luke talk about the piety. And also the rejection of religious hypocrisy. Some very powerful themes here. And it might seem from these verses that it's like a to-do list, you know, or maybe a to-do and to-don't list. You know, don't do these things. Just do this. Just be better, and you can be a good Christian. And it's like, okay, that's impossible. I give up. But Jesus is not talking about behavior modification. It's not just changing what we do, because we know that doesn't work. We can't behavior modification our way into heaven. And Jesus isn't interested in that. That's what religion wants of us. Just do the certain thing, act the certain way. You know, stand exactly when, or else you're going to get it. You know, she'll come after you. You know, stand up on this song or else. You know, that's religion. I love that you don't do that. You're so cute. Tidy over there. She's dangerous, though. Don't you be careful around her. And powerful. So Jesus is not trying to change our behavior. Jesus is trying to change our values in these scriptures, trying to show us this new way, and actually tearing out, like in his questioning of the religious leaders of the day and challenging so strongly the religious leaders who were like, you're just doing this for the sake of this thing. The religion wasn't is supposed to help people. It's supposed to free people, not bind them up. So he just challenges. I love badass Jesus. I do. You know, he's throwing tables over, and he's like, you snakes, and, you know, he's like calling people out, and it's like, holy smokes. I didn't say this in the morning service, like I said. I didn't say that. I didn't go there. But that kind of challenge to religious leaders is so needed so many times. And having a new way. How do we do all of these things? Well, when your values change, behavior follows. You can't even help it. When I was a little kid, we would be driving down the highway, And you would throw stuff out the window, your garbage, your litter, whatever, and you never even thought about it. I was, like I told you, I was raised in the Stone Age, right? These kind of weird, this weird mentality that it doesn't affect you or it doesn't matter because you're just dealing with your own stuff. So everything went out. Well, why did we get to do that? Because everybody did it. Now, when you learn stuff about how bad that is for animals, how bad that is for the earth, you change. Colonization has had a huge impact on Indigenous people. Some of us forgot our values or had them beaten out of us in residential school. Take care of Mother Earth was changed to, it's all going to burn anyway. Right? Farm equipment, there was this old, I don't even know what it was, something to do with a farm, and it was in our river. It was on the north side of the river, on the northwest side, and we would swim on the southwest side, and we would fish on in the middle of the bridge, on the east side of the bridge. But we weren't even thinking about, you know, how that farm equipment was. It was in there for years. I remember I was a little kid, and I was looking down on it, and you know, if you sit on the beach in the sand and then you get up and you see the strange butt mark, that was the seat of this farm equipment. Like, it was really old, weird stuff. Like, we were always like, butt seat, you know, as little kids. But that's all we thought about it. We never were like, hey, why is that there? And kind of maybe dangerous, and maybe we should get it out. It's been there for years. There was a generation that was so wounded amongst my people. So wounded they forgot themselves. Someone along the way remembered the stories, remembered that we were a strong people and a good people. Our people were never given the words in residential school. They were never told, you are made, you Dakeh are made in the image of God. We were never told that. One of my cousins was lined up on her first day of residential school, and the nun said, God made a mistake when he created you people, and we're here to fix that mistake. Just unbelievable that anybody would say that to little kids. But this wounding can make people forget themselves. So remembering the stories, when we remembered our value and when our values in ourselves changed, then that farm equipment was taken out. The farm equipment was gone. So the new values that we're learning about here, love your enemies, do good to those, do good to them. That's a tricky one, isn't it? But again, enemies in our context, maybe not as dark. In some ways, it's dark, but you know, our enemies, the enemy is not the customer service rep at Kudo who would not, you know, help me change my thing and was mean to me. And that's not the enemy, although I feel like it probably is in my life. It's not the enemy. Not the person who stole your parking spot. You know, I showed up this morning and tonight 5 minutes early to the service, and I got the last parking spot out there. That's never happened before. I was always driving by like, jerks. You know, somebody took my spot. But our enemies, who is our enemy? Well, in Jesus' day, and again, ancient people, Jesus' day enemies killed all the baby boys in town when he was born because of a prophecy, because of a sign. And that genocide happened because to maintain power. So rethinking our enemy. We have to rethink our enemy. Why does the enemy have to take your coat? Why are they being violent to us? It says, you know, if somebody slaps you, turn the other cheek. That's awful. It's awful in every single way. It's an injustice to you. It's violation of you, of your person. but to question what caused that pain. I think this is where these new values are taking us. Rethink our enemy. And in verse 35, it says, you will be children of the Most High when we do all of these things. And then it says, for God is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. And I just kind of think about my kids when I read that. Some little brats. I miss those little brats. Now I got a giant over here. He's 6'3". But be merciful. All of these things, they just feel so wrong. They just feel like, no, that's not the right way to be, Jesus. What are you on about? What are you talking about? And then be compassionate. So I'm not happy about the person who stole half of my load of laundry out of the dryer at my apartment building. I'm not happy about it. When it happened, I wasn't like filled with compassion and love for this person. I was so ticked off. I was so angry, and I was like, come on, like I live in social housing. I'm like, this is the poor stealing from the poor. And of course, I don't think I'm poor, but I think everybody who's rich always says, I'm not rich. And it took me a while. It really did. It took me a while to kind of come around to the, because there's another thing too. I had made a list, all of these clothes that I was washing. I had just gone on a trip. And so when I got back from the trip, I still had the list of, I'm going to pack all of these things, right? And so I knew everything that was gone. And I was like, I needed that stuff. Like, I don't have, whatever, $35 shirt. Come on. Like, I felt ripped off. I felt violated. I felt like an injustice had been perpetrated on me. And Jesus says, all of those things, you know, if somebody steals your shirt, give them your jacket too. And I didn't put up a note saying, if you want my jacket, come over to my apartment and have my, I didn't do it. I didn't obey the Bible. But honestly, when I thought about it after, it's been like months. I have to think, where is the injustice in this situation? Was it perpetrated on me? Or was it the fact that this person somehow had to rob me? Somehow had some kind of a need that I don't know about? Maybe they took the clothes, my very expensive $35 shirt, not expensive, and maybe sold it on the block. You know, maybe got $5 for it and got a hit someplace. I don't know. I don't know what was happening. I don't know the stuff that's behind this. But I don't think the injustice is in that I was robbed. It didn't happen to me. It's that we live in a society where people are forced to rob to survive. There's a phrase that's new, was new to me in the last bunch of years, and it's called the survival sex trade. If you haven't heard those words before, that is terrifying. Terrifying that we have a society, that we have built the foundation of this society where people are forced to do inhuman things to survive, just to survive. This new foundation, it's the way of the kingdom of God, and it's tough. It's a lot of tough stuff, a new way of thinking. And I think that I call the kingdom of God the good road and walking in a good way. And it's not, like I said, it's not just changing the way that we act in situations. It's thinking about our values. It's thinking about things deeply, the way that Luke is showing us how Jesus was asking us to think. It involves the decolonization of the Bible. It involves the decolonization of our churches, of our systems, of the systemic racism that is built into the founding of our country. We talk about Canada being a Christian nation. That's not an Indigenous perspective, unless you're talking about the Christian doctrine of discovery, which is terrible. There's a book out by Mark Charles called Unsettling Truths, if you're interested in learning more. He's got a bunch of stuff on the doctrine of discovery online as well, if you're interested in more of that. Decolonizing, wrestling the Bible away from empire ideology and placing it in the hands of the common people. I think when we look at the woes, I think that in Canada, it's kind of like watching the Hunger Games, and, you know, we all kind of want to relate to Katniss, and, you know, but none of us are shooting squirrels for our meals, right? None of us are living in that kind of despair. All of us in Canada, most of us, with the exception of a few Indigenous communities and a few inner city communities, most of us, when the Hunger Games, should find ourselves as citizens of the capital, actually, just with gross riches. So changing these systems, placing the gospel back in the hands of the common people. And a new foundation, new values to think about. Thanks for listening.